Welcome to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the volunteers. So we are here to encourage and equip you. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you are asking so you can help the next generation know Jesus.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Today I've got Lisette. Lisette, you are a familiar voice on this podcast.
Say hey, hi, everybody. Hey. Hey, everybody.
And then we've got our friend. We've traded one bald guy for another. It's not Sid, who we've often had when it's the three of us. It's Steve Zacharias.
Yeah. All the way from Manitoba.
I know. And Steve, honestly, although this is an audio podcast, so nobody can see you, when I first met you, I thought, oh, you and Sid are honestly must be brothers because you both have glasses. You both look a lot alike. You have the same amount of hair. I don't know if that's encouraging or not. Should have asked you that ahead of time.
I was going to say dangerously good looking, but I think it would just be more accurately to say similar looking.
Similar looking. But no, that is an encouragement, I think, to both of you. I think for both of you, you should take it as a perk. Okay, now today's conversation is a big one, but before we want to get to it, we should set the tone and let everybody know kind of who you guys are, because honestly, you should download random podcasts and take people's advice on the internet. But at the same time, it's nice to know that there's maybe some history or some experience to answer such a personal question as what should you do when ministry is lonely. So, Lisette, why don't you start us off and fill people in that are listening a little bit of who you are, where you're coming from, and tell people about your whole CV, everywhere you've been, your
right,
resume.
Right, totally, which is what nobody wants to hear about, but I'm a Canadian girl who grew up in Calgary, who did youth ministry for a lot of years, moved to the U.S., did youth ministry for a lot more years, and then just kept doing ministry, a lot of it. In lots of different contexts, and just have had the pleasure of getting to be involved with lots of great organizations to do youth ministry, to talk about this. This is what we talk about all the time. So that's, and I live in Atlanta, Georgia right now.
Let me fill in a couple gaps for people. So you've been in executive leadership at a number of churches, which is always exciting. You've overseen some big ministries for sure. And then some people will recognize, I know a lot of volunteers are listening, but maybe your church uses the Orange curriculum. And so Orange oftentimes in kids ministry, but there's also, you know, student curriculum. And so Lisette, you're on our team in our organization, but you also are one of the big trainers for Orange. And so you just filmed a masterclass on leading small groups. Is that right?
It's true.
That's available for people. We don't get any kickbacks on that. I don't know if you get kickbacks on that, but we can link that if people want access to it.
But we can promote it because it's still good.
It's good stuff.
It's good content.
But the point that people should know is that, honestly, folks from all across the U.S. and Canada have looked to you for advice and thoughts on stuff. So it's always encouraging when we get to hear from you and get to talk about ministry. So that's Lisette. Also married to Kyle, has two dogs, two kids that are grown.
Correct. It's true.
Two kids that are pretty fun, actually. I've met both
most of the time.
I've only seen them maybe when they're having a lot of fun. But you know how that goes. Okay, Steve, introduce yourself for people so that they know a little bit of who you are, where you're coming from.
Hey, I am from Southern Manitoba. I've spent most of my life here. Which is in Canada, the Great White North. Which even in the summer months can turn into a white north, as we saw this last weekend. Anyway, cut my teeth in
snow
ministry
in May.
Camp.
Snow in May for people because they're listening to this. Snow in May in Southern Manitoba. What a time.
Right. It isn't May long until it snows. That's what we always say. But also worked out in the yard with shorts and short sleeves.
In the snow.
Same weekend. So anyway,
Keep going.
That's Canadian life. All right. So started out in camp ministry, which evolved into international camp ministry. All along the while was a volunteer youth leader in my own church until the Lord called me into full-time youth ministry in the church context, which then parlayed into youth worker community, doing some coaching here for youth workers.
Yeah. And so for people that are listening, we are all part of this organization called Youth Worker Community, which does a wide variety of things. You know, we have this school called the Coalition, where we train at the bachelor's and master's level. We have this coaching, these coaching programs. We work with youth workers. We hold events and conferences where thousands of youth workers come to different random events all across our country and beyond. So, you know, the fun part is that we get a chance to talk and think about youth ministry on a regular basis. And Lisette, what I would love to know is, in all of the conversations you get to have with youth workers, have you ever met one of them that this question, you know, what do you, should you do when ministry is lonely? Would they say like their ministry is lonely? Have you ever met anybody that would say that's the case?
Never. No, that's so rare. No, that feels like everybody, honestly. And I don't know that even we think to say, I think I'm just lonely. I think what we hear is, I'm really tired. I feel burnt out. I'm not sure if I can do it anymore. I feel drained. I feel unsupported. I feel like there's so many other words we hear, but so often what it actually comes down to is this just deep sense of like, I'm in this alone and I don't know how to do it when I feel alone. And so, yeah, I mean, I would say Steve and I have talked to, Jerry, you, like all of us have talked to so many youth workers in the last year in particular, where I would say, so often we're hearing like, I just, yeah, they're just on their own and they just feel isolated. So, yep.
And not just
all the time.
Like not just youth pastors even, right? Or like ministry leaders, like volunteers. Mm-mm. And even that you might be on a team and you're like, yeah, I'm technically, there's like three or four of us or 10 of us that do this thing every Wednesday night. And yet might still say they feel alone.
Feel alone. Well, can I just say, I think humanity feels alone right now. Like if you just see like what, especially the pandemic made us feel like, is it just, you know, people are working from home now. They're working, like everything just feels like changed and isolated. So I think people are lonely.
So that is, I mean, that's 100% what we're experiencing, hearing and seeing. And so there's lots of youth workers you're listening right now and you're like, yeah, that's my story. You're reading my mail. I downloaded it to hear all this. If this is not your experience, I hope maybe if you continue listening, you would look through the lens of realizing you might actually have some peers in your ministry, on your team, you know, at the ministry or church across the road, that this is part of your story, their story. And you might learn a few ideas on how you might be helped, be able to be helpful for them. Okay. So lots of people, this is their experience. What should you actually do when your ministry is lonely? Steve, give us the 3 points to success here. Is it a simple solution? Right. How do we fix the problem? What's going on?
Because we'll have this fixed in the next 15 minutes. Just take heart, right? Because loneliness is the easiest thing to cure. But I totally agree, Lisette. Like if you're going to make a person, like if you're going to see someone look at you as though you're reading their mind, you know, sometimes just pausing and say, man, this sounds really lonely. And it is the spot where our heart is. And so what I often approach with the next sort of question or conversation is just asking people, what do the relationships look like? And I tend to think of three categories of relationships, which for a lot of ministry leaders or even volunteer leaders or people in general, sometimes we don't have tremendous clarity on what the relationships in our lives look like. What do we take and give in each relationship? How do they fuel us and how do they extract energy from us? Because yeah, we're feeling a lot of those things, whether it be fatigue, loneliness, a lot of the things that were described earlier. So why don't I just start off with the people that pour into us, I think is one that we need to come to first, right? When we're feeling lonely.
Yeah, you've got these three categories. And I, actually, Steve, can you give people the categories? Because this is so valuable. And we know that the stakes are so high. If we don't actually work on this, we continue to see people that do indeed burn out, that do walk away from ministry, that give up on the ability to pour into students because they themselves just completely, you know, can't handle it anymore. So the stakes are high. And for the sake of the gospel, we have to think about this thoughtfully. So you've got these three categories. And I mean, I don't think they're necessarily earth-shattering, people will recognize them, but to process and think about them, this is going to be so great. So the first category you just mentioned is the people that pour into you. What do you mean by the people that pour into you?
Yeah, those are the people that are pouring into my life, refueling my tank, whether they be helping me figure out my own stuff, pouring new stuff in, or helping me when I'm stuck, that sort of thing. A couple other just real brief categories, and then we'll come back. And I think we want to come back to this one, those that pour in. So there's the people who pour in. There's also the people that I run with, the people that are running alongside me, doing life with me. And then there are the people that I'm pouring into.
So when you say running with people, those are like your peers kind of thing, like the...
Yeah. And so I'm thinking of the people who are my associates, the people that I have enough relational connection with that they can give me good insight feedback from perhaps their perspective, but maybe aren't so close to me that they won't be completely honest. For that, I look to my wingman. Those are the people who are just really the encouragers in my life, the people that I link arm with, the people who will get down into the trenches with me.
The people you can share memes with on your phone, you know, like that kind of thing.
That's really important. That's really important. The people who really get your memes and that sort of thing. And then there's my soulmates, you know, those that I am intimately connected with, who know my deep, dark spaces.
Your soulmates. Let me just clarify, because oftentimes, Lisette, when we hear the word soulmate, I'm assuming.
Right.
Yes.
Just one.
Yeah. You just get one. Steve, just clarify. We'll go back into this maybe the next time we talk about it, but what do you mean by soulmates?
Right. I think we have the Hollywood version of there's one soulmate in your life, and we often think romantically. When we think soulmate, perhaps I need to come up with a new term for that one, because that is the first thought, right? But I'm thinking about spiritual friendship here, you know, where your friendship is more than just activity-based, conversation-based, even emotionally based, but the people that you can get into space with, and it's like your spirits connect. You ever had that where you just like, when you can really pray with someone and they just get you on a spiritual level?
I mean, maybe I would have to think about that. That's a deep question.
I feel like I want to have like an Anne of Green Gables moment and talk about kindred spirit, right? Like that's how I think about Anne and
Diana.
Drink
some raspberry cordial.
Oh gosh. Okay. We should keep moving here.
Okay. So the running with, and then the people that you're pouring into, that was the third category that you quickly riffed there. I'm just giving people just a sprinkling of what that is so that we know what's coming up.
Yeah. And when I think about the people that I pour into, I tend to think in three categories. I think of those who might be in reverse, you know, who are making life choices or in crisis, where they are in some sort of level of risk to themselves or in some turmoil or despair, are depressed, really anxious. Those people who feel like they're taking two steps backwards for every step they take forwards. And I think for those of us that are in ministry, we probably recognize that this is probably a high concentration in our relational structures, is we tend to seek out those lost sheep that have taken two steps back. I think
you put just generally like the students that are in our small group into that pouring into category?
Yeah. And even within those students that are in our small groups, there might be some that are in reverse. There might be some that are in neutral. That you're thinking about, how do I get this kid to just really clue in to the potential that they have? Because it's kind of, it feels like they've shown up to this youth night simply to hang out with their friends and just be entertained. Mm-hmm. But you can see that there's some spark there, and you're thinking about how do I ignite that potential within them, the kids that are in neutral.
Okay. So back to the bird's eye view. So we're thinking, what should you do when your ministry is a little bit lonely? And Steve, you want us to think about these three categories of people that are in our life, the people that we're pouring into. So a lot of times we think about those students that we're pouring into constantly. We're not looking for something, hopefully, from the teenagers that are in our small groups, but we get to instead pour into them. But we get stuff out of them too. Sometimes they come and they help you build the shed in the backyard. And so there's a little bit of, you know, back and forth.
Right.
There's this people we're running with for sure. So the people that are our peers. And then let's take a few minutes and just thoughtfully think about these people that are pouring into our lives. Because I think when we feel really lonely, that's often where we feel the biggest gap. If I had to guess, that my cup is empty, I'm pouring out my cup all the time, but nobody's pouring into my life. Would that be fair to say?
Jerry, you know, the one thing that I find most often as I talk to people in ministry, whether they be volunteer or port leaders, when we come to this point of asking, who are the people that pour into you? That's when the silence hits. Mm-hmm. Because we have often put so much energy into the people that we pour into. we have a realization that we need to have some people that we're running with, and we've chased after some relationships. But sometimes a life in leadership, we can have a real big gap in the people that we that pour into us. And there's three relationships that I'll chase after in my life to nurture that within myself. And those are my mentors, my coaches, and my counselors. And I
Multiple mentors and multiple coaches and multiple counselors? That seems like a lot of people.
How many do we have? You know, I like to make, you know, if I were to take inventory, I'd like to have five people that I could really trust to pour into me. Does that sound sound overwhelming?
But, I mean, if somebody's
lovely,
it's yes, it sounds nice, but there's somebody listening that's like, yeah, but I don't have anybody right now. So having multiple in all of those categories sounds extensive. So maybe walk us through, Steve, how do you think about these categories? And maybe if somebody is listening and they are really lonely, they don't have anybody pouring in, how do we actually increase even from zero to one, the folks in those categories?
Or even thinking of where to start. Right. I think each of those roles plays a different part in pouring into me. I think of my counselors. Those would be the people who have some real emotional insight and can help me process my emotion. There's always, you know, and it's easiest to think of this in terms of, you know, professional counselor, right? You go, you book an appointment, you sit with a counselor, and that would be fantastic. I realize that, like you said, if we're having multiples, you know, this could become really costly unless you got some great insurance coverage or that sort of thing. But, and it is helpful to have someone who's professional. You know, I think about it. I know how to change my own oil in my car, right? But when I take my car to my mechanic, they'll often point out some of the other things that I might not have thought of that I should be thinking about to just expand the longevity of my vehicle's life. In the same way, I've got some really great friends who get me emotionally. Some people who have gone on before me and just understand the emotional stuff of ministry and life. And they can ask me really great questions that will catalyze my thought around emotions. It's also another thing to be able to sit down with someone who's professional and just who really knows how to diagnose or to really put a finger on the common feelings that we often have and help us have some clarity. Because there's certainly emotional elements that I'm comfortable with, and there are those that I'm uncomfortable with, and I tend to focus a lot on the things that I'm comfortable with, but I find that my growing edge is often in the places where I'm uncomfortable with those conversations, and I need someone who's insightful to take me and journey with me into some of those uncomfortable emotional spaces.
So you say that can be like that can be a professional counselor, but it could be somebody that is just thoughtful in that regard. Doesn't necessarily have to be somebody that you're paying. Is that what you mean?
Right. And I would love to encourage people to seek out someone who's professional. I know that there's a certain stigma to that. And I know that there's barriers or resistance that we often have when we think about that. I hope that people would be courageous to pursue that. I've got a counselor. I've got multiple counselors that I would go for different reasons. I think there's, you know, my one local counselor that, you know, she's just really great, gives me some great insights in some areas. And then there's another counselor that I have who was a pastor himself. And so when I think that there's something that I need to process on that sort of level, I'll give him a call. So,
there's somebody listening and they're thinking, that sounds like a big step. What would you suggest if they need to go for the first time? Like, how do you even start to think about that category or add somebody to that category? Just Google.
Yeah, I would ask a friend who they like. You know, a counseling relationship is exactly that. It's a relationship. And not every counseling relationship will feel natural. I've gone to counselors that I didn't really like, didn't really connect with me, who were going in a different direction than where I wanted to, where I really felt most helpful. And after a couple sessions, I was like, oh, this isn't the right person for me. A lot of people will step out of a counseling relationship altogether and say, this stuff doesn't work. I was fortunate enough in my second try to find someone who really, really connected. And since then, I've explored lots of relationships with other counselors. My church blessed me with a budget to go and sit with as many counselors as I wanted, mostly because I would be recommending them to the students that I was working with. And I think that that's something that a person could do as well. If you don't know where to start, talk to a pastor, talk to a friend that you know of that might have a really great counselor and say, hey, what do you like about your counselor? What didn't you like about a different counselor? And, you know, referral is a really great place to start.
Okay. Okay. So we're thinking about the people that are pouring into you. Maybe we're missing that. And that's why we're experiencing that loneliness and feeling lonely. So we can think in the category of counselors. What were some of the other categories? Because there's some people that are like, oh, I'm feeling kind of lonely, but I wonder if there's a different category I could look to first. What were the other two that you mentioned?
Yeah, there's my mentors and there's my coaches as well. And why don't I just touch on coaches for just a moment? Because what a counselor is to emotion, I think a coach is to thought. Sometimes I just get stuck in a thought pattern, a thought loop. And a coach, like a counselor, will ask really great questions, but will help me catalyze my thoughts. Maybe ask me questions from different angles. Maybe I just haven't thought something through on a specific level. And I know Lisette is probably really wise in this area, where she might be able to help us, you know, differentiate the coach relationship as well. Lisa, what do you take away from coaching?
Yeah, I think one of the things is what a counselor can help us do is help us look backwards, right? And to process some of the things that have been. But what a coach does is propel you forward, right? And so sometimes when we're feeling lonely or we're feeling stuck or we're feeling unsure or we just can't stop thinking, like you said, I think what a coach has the ability to do is help you see a way forward again and catalyze some thinking and some ideas and some motion and whatever you need to just get yourself moving forward again, which can just be a huge gift. And I think, Steve, I mean, you're an incredible coach. And it's one of the things I love that we actually do as a community, as a youth worker community, is that we have like these coaching cohorts for just that reason, right? We said like, man, we see a lot of youth workers that are feeling pretty lonely. We see a lot of them that feel stuck. And so we were like, what if we could create like a community plus have coaches that were equipped to actually ask great questions and help people catalyze their thinking? And that was how the coaching cohorts were born, which is really cool. And I love that you look after that, Steve, because you do an incredible job with that.
Well, and one thing that I find just really helpful is, you know, and this is where I'm going to toss the compliments back at Lisette, because Lisette was my coach, who just really drew out some really great forward-thinking questions that once I had clarity on where it was that I wanted to go, I could start looking for the resources to help me get to that place. And that brings me to the third relationship, and that's the mentorship. Mm. See, I think my coach will bring to awareness what I need in order to get moving forward. And then that's when I go and search out who is someone who has been there and done that and can give me some guidance. Now, I think a lot of people find their mentor relationships really frustrating, mostly because I think we miss the clarity in that relationship. I wonder how many times a person has come to you and said, hey, would you mentor me? And I have no idea what that means to them, what it means for me, and what it is that we're actually going to do in this relationship. And a lot of times people will say, my mentor is too busy for me. And to which I'll often ask, is your mentor really too busy? Or does your mentor actually have clarity as to what you want from them? So when I've sat with my coach, I know where I want to go. And let's say, for instance, I'll give you an example of one of the mentors that I have in my life is through counseling, through my coaching, I recognized that I just really wanted to have a more vibrant prayer life. And so I looked to the people in my network and I identified a person who I felt had a very vibrant prayer life and something that I wanted in my life. And so I went to him and I says, hey, what would you think about meeting with me every other Friday for the next 2 years just to coach me or guide me or mentor me in the type of prayer life that you have? Do you think you could impart parts of that to me over? Now, you might not do that big of an ask with a mentor. I knew this person was going to say yes to that because for him, this prayer life is just what he does. And so for him, it was just an invitation for an ongoing coffee together. For me, it was something so much more. Now, there might be some other area that I want to grow in. Let's say I want to grow in areas of leadership. And I can identify a really strong leader in my life and say, hey, would you take the next 6 weeks just to pour into me the top 10 things that I need to know as a leader that you've learned through your life. And, you know, just watch what will happen with that. So then I'm identifying the different areas of growth and I'm seeking out people in my life. We often think of mentorship as being kind of this Yoda-esque sort of relationship that we carry for a lifetime. I tend to break it down into smaller pieces for myself and think of the different attributes or the places where God is revealing to me that I need to grow. And I seek out people who can help me get to that point.
Okay, so let me just, again, step back and think about, we've got people listening, they're feeling a little bit lonely in ministry. We're saying you need to evaluate these three categories that you've got in your life. The people pouring into you is what we're talking about today. And so if somebody's listening and they're at zero, like nobody is pouring into me, and you've just given me these three categories, but now that seems like a lot of work to try to fill in these categories. I don't know which one I'm supposed to start with or what I'm supposed to do in order for this to feel like it's like, that's a great plan, Steve, but it's a lot. What would you say to somebody that's still lonely, wondering what to do exactly next? Where should they actually start?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Jer. And sometimes in the magnitude of how big this all feels, sometimes we don't take that first step. And I had a ministry mentor that would often ask me, so like, what's the best way to eat an elephant? To which the response was always one bite at a time, right? An elephant seems like such a monumental sort of task, but it starts just one step at a time. And so, you know what? As we went through those three different relationships, maybe there was one that just kind of resonated a little bit. Maybe you said, hey, I've got clarity on an area where I want to grow, and I know of a person who can help me do that. You might invite a mentor relationship. And you might try something small. Hey, let's meet once a week for the next 3 weeks and just kick the tires on it, see what happens.
Or you know what? I might suggest if somebody's looking for a mentor, I think the secret way to get a mentor is to never ask somebody to mentor you, but just to ask, hey, I've got these seven questions. I'm wondering if I could actually buy you coffee and just if you could answer them for me. And if we actually are thoughtful about asking great questions to somebody, usually they're excited to give the answers and they might even go for a second time because it was so exciting and you were so valuing their time. That's my secret way to getting somebody to spend time, unless you've got the relational cred that they're like, oh yeah, I'll jump in for 3 weeks. That's no problem.
Right. The word mentor can scare a lot of people off.
Yeah, exactly.
In a hurry. But yeah. Hey, I got five questions for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a great way.
Yeah. Okay. So think about which one is kind of weighing on your heart as you're listening to those categories. I think that feels right. It feels a little bit like, I mean, it's hard to know when you're feeling lonely, like, is this really going to be the thing that changes my loneliness? If I think about like a coach, or like I go for counseling, like that's going to solve my loneliness. So maybe Lisette, you can just encourage somebody that's a little bit doubtful about this process. Maybe they're a little bit too much in their head already. And they're like, I don't know. Like the real reason is that everybody's a jerk around me and nobody's supporting me in my role in youth ministry. And I'm just burning out because it requires too much. This is just another thing that you're trying to put on me. I don't think it's actually going to solve any problems for me.
I think I would say just give it a try. Because here's what we've seen, right? Like, I think that's what we've seen with the coaching cohorts is the amount of conversations we've had with people that just said, I think if we didn't have this, we might not have made it, right? And just like, I think I would have just stopped serving, or I would have stopped being a part of my church, or I would have stopped whatever. And honestly, I've heard that from people like as a pastor, like with their marriage, that it was, it was a courageous step to say, okay, I'll try talking to a counselor. And you wouldn't think that a conversation with someone would make your marriage work better, but it does. Or it makes your parenting work better, but it does. And so I think when life just feels wildly hard, the invitation and the courageous step to say, okay, I'll invite somebody in. And maybe it is just somebody that you know is really, really nice. And you're just like, could you just have coffee? Is a great first step, because then you've just talked to somebody about it. But I think taking that courageous step and saying, okay, and sometimes it is, yeah, it's paying someone, it's joining a coaching thing, it's finding a therapist. And sometimes it's like, who do I know on a Sunday morning? Who's somebody at work that I just really enjoy talking to? But something about inviting people into your life will change your life.
Yeah. Okay. So what should you do when your ministry is lonely? You should find somebody to pour into you. and we've got a few good categories there. We're going to come back for the next couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about those other big categories, thinking about the people that you're running with and the people that you're pouring into and how to evaluate those relationships. But Steve, you should have the last word here, and do just invite people. So obviously, there's lots of places people can find coaching, counseling, and mentors, but we do actually offer this coaching program, which they're welcome to. There's no pressure on that. We'll drop links in the show notes, but give people just a bird's eye view of what that entails in case they want to jump in as a volunteer youth worker. Of course, we'd love to have them.
Yeah. And you know what? We're always available to people to have a conversation. Maybe you don't know where to start and you just want to touch base with someone, you know, reach out, even head over to youthworker.community and just hit the chat. It actually goes to us, and we'd love to work with you. And whether that be in a formal relationship, like a coaching relationship, where we can walk with you and catalyze insights, or whether that be referring you on to somewhere else where we know there's other great resources, we're here to help.
That's fantastic. We'll put those links in the show notes, and so be sure to check those out. And then come on back next week, and we'll dive into the next part of this conversation, and just know that we are with you. You're making an eternal difference, and we want you to be in this for the long haul, because it does make such a difference. So let us know if we could be helpful to you and the ministry that you've got to your students. All right, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.